Welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. We are going into the Camping World Truck Series this week with driver Tyler Ankrum of Hattori Racing. Tyler is new to Hattori Racing this year. He's going to take over that number 16 Toyota. Scott Cipadelli is going to be the crew chief, and that program is actually expanding to 2 full-time trucks this year, something that I'm going to ask Tyler about as he'll be teammates with Chase Purdy. Again, Tyler's moving over to Hattori Racing after spending a couple seasons with GMS Racing. He finished 15th in the standings last year. So we're going to catch up on what it's like getting ready for a season with a new team, fitting in with everybody over there. In fact, Tyler had some fun things to say about how really the chemistry has not been that hard to build. It's been an easy transition for him. And again, we look at how they're going to expand his relationship with Chase. And a little bit about Tyler's background, for those who don't know. Yeah, there's some stuff out there you can clearly see on Instagram, or if you Google, that he comes from the West Coast and loves being on the ranch and working with animals. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and just really get to know more about Tyler, in addition to, as I said, getting ready for this season. Tyler was great. I really enjoyed having him on the podcast. I thought he was well-spoken. He seemed to really enjoy himself, and it was a lot of fun to catch up with him as we get ready for 2022. So I hope you enjoy it. Here is Tyler Ankrum on the Racing Writers Podcast. So, Tyler, thanks for joining me again. As I said this morning, let's just first, you know, how's it going over there? Just getting acclimated to Hattori? How much time have you been able to spend over there? Just getting used to your new team, your new crew chief, just a new building, everything. What's it been like since the announcement, again, of just trying to get over there and get comfortable?
Well, I mean, I try to come here every day, not only just to hang out with the guys. I mean, I love being at the race shop. I love trying to help out where I can. It's actually been a pretty easy transition. I know that's kind of seems like a common thing we all say, but this has probably been the easiest transition. And I think it helps too when you see guys at the racetrack all the time. And now that I've been in the series for 3 years, you kind of have an idea who everyone is already. But I mean, these guys at HRE are awesome. They love to talk crap with me. They love to dish it out, and they can take it, which I love. I love locker room talk. And I mean, it's just been a ton of fun. They aren't too hard on me yet, but you know, they like to have their fun. But it's been a pretty awesome experience so far.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's been very easy, as you said, to just kind of build some chemistry. And hopefully by the time you guys go racing, you'll just be ready to go because you all have already had that time together. So it sounds like it's pretty fun, actually. It sounds like it's going to be a pretty fun group.
It is fun. And also, too, HRE is so much smaller, and coming from GMS, GMS had, you know, 100 people in their shop working, and over here they have, you know, 20, 25. So I'm terrible with names already as it is. And so with the fewer amount of people here, it's actually been pretty easy to learn everybody's name. So that's actually been a fun part about this.
Yeah. So you don't mind then that it's a smaller operation, because that has its benefits, obviously. There's a lot more focus on, again, the 2 trucks that you guys are going to have, and, you know, everybody can help out, and it seems like everybody be on the same page and kind of pulling the rope in the same direction.
Yeah. It just seems like with here having a smaller team, everyone does everything. That's the awesome thing. Not one person just has one job. Everyone just kind of seems to be really well-rounded, and they could do anything, which I love. Because that really gives it the atmosphere of, hey, we're not truck racing, we're late model racing. We're all racers here. And that's the feeling that I get every morning when I walk into HRE. It's just, it feels like I'm super late model racing again, or late model racing again. And I love that feeling because it's a lot of fun. There's not the pressure, I guess you could call it corporate pressure. You know, I got to walk in there with a collared shirt on and nice jeans and nice boots. I can roll in here from the ranch and, you know, not be too worried about it.
Well, that's good. It sounds like things are off to a good start. That's always a positive. You mentioned there about GMS. You'd been there for 2 years. You'd said you've been in the series now 3 years, going into your 4th season. So I'm curious, take me through why this move, kind of how it all happened, because I think we'd gotten pretty used to you being over there at GMS. And then, oh, here we go. It's kind of a big change, in my opinion. This is one of the bigger driver changes, I would say, in the truck series going into 2022. So take folks through kind of just how it happened, why it happened, and again, just how it all came together.
I've been feeling for a little while that I just needed to change, need kind of a change in pace or a different view out my window when I wake up in the morning. And this opportunity, it was random because it was late. It was like, well, I wouldn't say it was late. I want to say it was around the second round of playoffs. I think it might have been Bristol week or Bristol weekend where this opportunity arose. Shiggy Hattori had approached my father about me driving for HRA next year as the second truck. At this point in time, Austin was still planned to be in the 16. He wasn't even planned to go to RCR yet, and which he dropped that bombshell on us at Talladega. And so we were obviously 100% interested right away because everybody just knows what HRA is all about. They know how to win over here. And I thought it was a great opportunity for myself to go over there and compete and win. And also, too, I'd always heard great things about HRE and the fact that not only is it a great group of guys, it's a great place to work. And most of the guys that have been here for a long time. And I love that because it tells me that fraternity is not a right word, but it's a brotherhood here. Everybody is in it together. And you win together as a family, you lose together as a family in racing. And for me, when I had learned that a lot of the guys have been here for a long time, after that, I was all in. I was pot committed, as they say. And I just wanted to get after it from the get-go.
Well, and as you said, I mean, everybody's been there for quite a while. There's hardly ever turnover that you hear of at that team. And one of the guys who's been very instrumental is Scott Cipadelli, who you're going to be working with a lot. What's been your first impressions of Scott and maybe just his leadership and how you two are going to gel?
My first impression, what was my first impression of Scott? I like Scott a lot because Scott's a very zero BS kind of guy, which I like. It's very black and white. I don't like the, well, Scott kind of does this thing where he's like, when he feels like he has to say something like important, he just goes, he does that. And I pick up on impressions very quickly, especially when I spend a lot of time around people. And I spent a lot of time at the shop the past 2 months. But I
Yeah, he
like
gets
Scott a
that
lot.
look on his face before he, yeah.
And I wish I had glasses on me right now because he has the old man look where he, like it's down on the bridge of his nose and he always looks at you through like the top of his glasses, which just reminds me of my grandpa. Not that he's that old, but he does have some salt and pepper going on. But I think give me and Scott some time to gel and work together. It's been a very hectic off season. With this whole COVID thing, parts and materials are harder to get than what they once were. So, he's still trying to have to figure all that stuff out. Not only that, just be a crew chief. So for him, it's been tough to set time aside for me, which I'm 100% okay with. There's still plenty of time till Daytona, and I don't think I'm a very hard person to get along with. So I think we'll be all right.
Right. Two wins in 3 seasons. As you go into 2022, and you mentioned, oh, one win in,
One win.
my
Well,
bad,
one pole.
one pole. I'm sure I was just looking at a whole bunch of numbers and I wrote it down wrong. So one win. As you look at 2022, Tyler, you said there about, everybody knows what this team is about. You've heard good things in the past. You've raced around their equipment. So when you go in now to another season, is this a year where you feel like you got to step up a little bit? You got to take that next step. You've got to show a little bit more for yourself, if that makes sense.
100% for sure. I mean, as you said, it's no secret that I haven't won in 2 years. And for me, ultimately, what this is just all about, just getting back to the basics, not try to burn myself out, not even halfway through the season. My plan is just to not do what I've always been doing, but find what actually does work for me. And now that I have a fresh start here, I can wipe the slate clean and say, okay, I'm restarting from scratch. I'm gonna throw away what I've known from Chevy and the old Toyota bodies. Now we have new Toyota noses and tails. I'm throwing away all my previous knowledge, and I want to come to the season as if I'm a rookie, as if I have no prior knowledge but the prior experience to help me through it. And so I feel like that'll help me a lot. Then also too, I don't feel like that I need to just break my back to absolutely go out and dominate. I feel like with me coming here and the personnel and the people that work here, that I won't have to break my back. We'll all carry the load together. We'll all share the weight of trying to get to victory lane, trying to win a championship. But for me, most importantly, it's about consistency. If you can run top seven every week, you'll be able to contend for a championship at least. I mean, Matt Crafton's proved it. He didn't win a race at all in, what was it, 2020 or 2019? It's 2019.
It was 19, yeah.
Yeah, it was 19. Didn't win a race all year long and then won the championship. And that just goes to show that, you know, even with this new, I say new, this playoff format that we've been doing now for a couple years still means consistency is king. And it still means that you got to be able to run up front every stage. And sometimes if you win both stages, doesn't mean you win the race, but it still means you got to be there fighting for the finish, because ultimately at the end of the day, if you have perfect restarts and you're pit perfect on pit road, those are the easiest times to pass. So if you're a seventh place truck, well, then you can run fifth or you can run fourth. Well, if you're a fifth place truck and you're perfect on pit road, perfect on restarts, well, then you can run third. And if you're a third place truck and you're perfect on pit road, you're perfect on restarts, well, then you have an opportunity to win. And that's what it's really the name of the game.
Well, I was just getting ahead of myself, giving you that second win. So clearly I have confidence that you and Zippy will do that at some point this year. So one win, working on that second. How much, Tyler, looking at these past 2 years, the way that we've been racing with this pandemic and obviously no practice, no qualifying, how much do you think that's affected you just in general, just trying to tune in your race trucks, just trying to get a feel for that racetrack, maybe just obviously track position where you start the race? Do you think that that's affected you maybe more so than others the last couple of years?
I think it 100% has. Because for me, when I first got in trucks, I remember thinking to myself, okay, I don't have the experience. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the craft to be as good as these guys that have been in it for a year, 2 years. So I just remember thinking to myself, okay, what's the one way I know that I can make sure I at least have a faster truck than them? So regardless of my knowledge or experience, I can have a better driving racing vehicle in order to beat them. And so I just threw myself into knowing the truck, learning about the truck, the mechanics. So that way, when practice came, that I can make sure I had as close to perfect as possible, balanced truck and a fast truck as well. And I feel like that's a big part or reason why we had a lot of speed in 2019 and it worked. And I think I kind of got a little too far ahead of myself. Like I got a little bit too obsessed with knowing the truck and knowing the numbers. And I let that get away from me. Kind of became a junkie about it. And now I feel like I've brought that back where I don't now have knowledge and the experience. My craft has gotten better on pit road, better on reefs. And so I don't need to rely on that as much. But that said, now I practice qualifying again. And so when I felt hindered me all the way through COVID, and I was just like, oh, I just need qualifying practice back. I really just felt like that for me, that having practice and qualifying was always big because it got me in the truck. It got me familiar with it instead of just getting out, going out and racing. I was able to anticipate what was going to happen with my vehicle. And I think that made me always way more comfortable in the race. And even the first year of COVID, when we didn't have practice, it took me a long time to get comfortable with that idea of just getting at the racetrack at 12 o'clock, rolling up with my driver bag and just hanging out, having a water, playing on my phone. Like, all right, race is 4 hours away still. What am I going to do till then? There was no like rush. There was no hurry. There was no, we're going to watch film after practice or we're going to go do media availability where you're constantly in this mode of go, 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 go. And it was very weird for me. And now that we're out of that, we have practice and qualifying again, whether it is a 20-minute practice or 45-minute practice, every little bit helps. And in my opinion, also, I think the truck series, with the amount of rookies that it has in it and people that don't have the experience, I think we need practice and qualifying anyways, especially with the way they were doing the points format. We went to the dirt race at Knoxville, and guys that generally run 15th to 25th, had the opportunity to start up front at Watkins Glen. And some of us guys who typically run up front were in the back. And so you have all this going on and just doesn't make sense. And especially if you have a rookie going to a new track and you have guys like the 10, 15 of us that are have a couple years experience, we already know how to get around there. So we're comfortable with just dropping the green flag and ripping around the racetrack while others aren't. So that can cause accidents. It can be dangerous. And so I'm just thankful that we're going back to this. And I think it'll not do nothing but strengthen the field.
Back to normal, I think, will be welcomed by everybody in that regard. Yeah. So Tyler, let's back up a little bit and talk about kind of how you got here. 2018 K&N East Champ. You started your Truck Series career with DGR. Again, coming to Hattori from a stint at GMS. When I go back and I think about that 2018 title, that K&N title, do you think that was maybe your break, so to speak? That was really kind of what helped put you more on the map in a sense and pushed you to where you start, you got that chance to start making some truck races, to start making National Series starts, and again, landed with DGR and then went full season and so on and so forth. Was that K&N title really the genesis of all that, you think?
I think so, yes. I've had the opinion of this for quite a while that people in racing know a lot about short track racing. They know a lot about super late model racing. They know a lot about late model, midgets, sprint cars. But when you get outside that realm of the National Series, not a ton is known about it. The names aren't known. And so I think what it was for me when I got to K&N was, yeah, sure, I was winning some races in super late models, and I won some races in late models, and I'd been doing late models for 2 years and then supers for two more years, and I'd won a handful of races each year. But it still wasn't like, hey, this kid is setting the world on fire. And that really didn't come until K&N, when Toyota was supporting DGR, and they had been supporting me. And I was a Toyota driver, and I won four races and won the championship. And then everybody was like, oh, who's this Tyler Ingram kid? But no, more importantly than that, David Gilliland's given me every single opportunity I've ever had in racing. When I say opportunity, to get my foot in the door. I'd come from core midgets and automatically gotten a midget. And then David came and asked me to come drive for him in the late models. And then my dad started my own late model team, and we ran our own late model team out of Tyler Ingram Racing. And then David asked me to come back and drive the K&N car for him, and we won a championship. And then the very next year, David asked me to come drive a truck. So he gave me every opportunity I had to get my foot in the door, and the opportunity to go in 2019, which gave me the opportunity to go drive for GMS. And Shiggy and Zipadelli see something in me to come drive over here. And so whatever it's been, whether it's been right place, right time, or just based off of merit, I've always been able to land myself in the right spots to do the most with them.
You said it right there about late models, super late models. You mentioned the midget, the quarter midget. I believe that's what you started at age 9, if I was reading your website correctly. How did you just get into racing in general? Was it in your family? I don't know much about your background as far as that goes, and I can't think of it was really something big in your family. So how do you go from 9 years old or being that young and just say, hey, I want to go racing? How did that start?
Well, not a lot of people know this, but I grew up on a ranch, and ever before I became a race car driver, I wanted to become a bull rider. My favorite movie as a little boy was 8 Seconds, and my hero was Lane Frost and Tuff Hiedeman. And I wanted to become a bull rider, and mom found out that I wanted to become a bull rider. So she said, no way, Jose. And dad was obviously, mom's the law. So dad was like, all right. And I don't remember this, but so this is the way the story goes. I was 6 or 7, and I think I might've been seven, and 6 and a half, 7. I don't remember. Anyways. Apparently I was sitting in my grandmother's lap and we were looking through family photo collage, and there was pictures of my dad in early 80s racing quarter midgets at Pomona Speedway, Baylands up in San Jose. And I don't remember the other racetrack, or it was Madera. And apparently right then and there, 6.5-year-old, 7-year-old Tyler Ingram just said, hey, I want one. And so everybody just kind of laughed at me and said, ha, 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 okay, we'll get you one. That part I remember because it never happened. And so I asked if we could go racing for 2 years. And on my 8th Christmas, I got my very first quarter midget. on my 9th birthday, it was my very first race at Orange Show Speedway in Southern California.
My goodness. That's awesome. I am curious, though, because obviously quarter midgets and midgets are completely different than stock car racing. So you start out doing that. Was it, as you said a minute ago, that the opportunity came because David Gilliland came calling that you jumped into late models and stuff like that? Or was it a plan to just be like, okay, stock cars are probably easier? But you had said a minute ago that it sounds like David, again, gave you that opportunity. So that's why you made the switch.
Yeah. So my dad in quarter midgets was my crew chief and car owner. My dad would, you know, wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go to work, and then he'd come home. And at night, while I was doing schoolwork, he'd work on my quarter midgets. And then when it time to go racing, we would load up the trailer and load up the motorhome, and we'd go racing. And my very first 2 years, we pretty much just raced in California, Arizona, New Mexico, Las Vegas. My final 2 years, we went national and we went all over the country. And on the quarter midget USAC tour, I'd become friends with Harrison Burton and Todd Gilliland. And it was actually, we'd been racing on tour for a year and a half, I think. Might have been the 2 years already, because I think I was already in a midget. And it was a New Year's Eve party. It was at my dad's house in California, and the Gillands were there. And David had asked me what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, because my dad was car chief and crew chief, or a car owner and crew chief. The very obvious switch was to go to a midget, because all midget is a big quarter midget. Then, you know, the numbers are all relatively the same. The idea was all relatively the same. There was just heavier car, bigger mount numbers. It was an easy switch. On this New Year's Eve party, David had asked me what I want to do for the rest of my life. And he was still cup racing at the time. I said, what do you mean what I want to do for the rest of my life, David? I want to do what you do. And David, you know, loud and clear, he heard that and asked my dad, you know, if, you know, we were interested in going late model racing. And, you know, my dad being my dad, he goes, well, David, I know nothing about it. It's me and my son, and we're racing. I know nothing about stock car racing. And so that's when David had bought a late model and put it in his shop. And then it was, but 2 or 3 months later, I was testing a late model at Hickory Motor Speedway.
It is amazing, isn't it, of how doors open like that. And you laid it out there of one thing just led to another. And it's awesome to me that, again, it was this door opened, then we jumped to this, then we did to this. And here you are now, again, a couple years in the truck series. It's really kind of phenomenal how it can work out that well for some people.
Yeah.
What was the catalyst, or what was the turning point, I should say? Because what was it, around 2014, I believe, you moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. I think mom came with you, right? Was that a story of, or a situation where racing at that point was just becoming so serious that it was necessary to move?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because my dad's always told me that if we're going to do something, we might as well be the best at it. And having that mentality, it was obvious that the switch needed to happen. And I needed to be out here full time to pursue my dream in racing. And that being on the West Coast, it wasn't feasible. Just showing up and, you know, showing up my driver bag and my helmet bag and saying, hey, I'm here to race. It doesn't work like that. You got to be in the shop. You got to be, you know, working out. You got to be watching film. You got to be where it is happening. And you just can't be the guy to pop in 3 days before the race, sit in the seat and go, cool, feels good, and then just go racing. You'll never improve that way. And so from the beginning, even when we first moved out to North Carolina, I had lived with the Gillands for like, I lived in their guest house. Me and my mom lived in their guest house for like 2 or 3 months. It seemed like quite a while. I think it might've been about 2 months before we got an apartment in Burkdale in Huntersville. And even then, having the shop right behind the guest house, or just being there in general, getting familiar with everything, learning how it all works, even though as a 12, 13 year old, I didn't understand any of it, I was invested.
So by 2014, you had already been racing for a couple of years, right? Because you said you were a teenager, you started at 9. So by 2014, you had been putting in some time already.
Yeah, I raced 3.5, 4 years in a quarter midget. I put about, I think, half to three quarters of a year in a midget. And that was before David had come asked me to race a late model.
Is it true that the story goes when you and mom moved here that it was, okay, lake house or farm? And again, with your history of growing up on a ranch, it was, I got to have the farm. I got to have something to do.
Yeah, so we had bounced in and out of apartments. We had lived in Huntersville in an apartment, and then we bounced up to Greensboro because that's when my dad started our own late model team, and we had a shop up in Ramseur. And so I was going to High Point Christian and living in Greensboro in an apartment. And then when mom and dad finally decided, okay, we're permanently moving to North Carolina. Dad's going to work for, 8 to 10 more years. And then we're putting our roots down. We're getting out of California. We want to live in North Carolina. And so dad had asked me and mom, hey, where would you guys like to live? Would you guys like to live on the lake, or would you guys like to live on a ranch? And for me, there's nothing really fun about a lake other than looking at it and occasionally going out on a boat. So I'm like, ranch, please, because I want to play cowboy still. And mom was the same way. Everybody loves the lake, but it gets boring after a while. And so my dad bought a place in Mooresville. It was like a 40 acre ranch. For the longest time, we've run about 10, 15 head of cattle just as kind of a hobby. And now my dad is getting ready to sell that place. And him and my grandpa bought a place up in Statesville. It's 400 acres. And they want to retire from work and pick up another job and basically live off the land for the rest of their lives and run 100 head of cattle.
You said there about you still want to play cowboy, and it made me laugh because your Instagram is awesome because you do share stuff that you're doing out there on the ranch. So I imagine you're someone that doesn't believe in wasting daylight, right? You got to be up early and keep yourself busy. And I just, again, imagine you're not someone that's ever bored. You got plenty to do there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you were, even as a kid, if you were ever caught playing video games during the day, you're always in trouble. It was either go outside and play, or here's a broom, or here's a weed whacker. And I'm actually super happy because they're moving up there, and it's so much land. Because 40 acres, when we moved there, I was 15, 16. 20 acres of it could look nice. So 20 acres of it was weed whacked. Every tree, every fence. And it wasn't like, oh, hey, I'm going to go spend 30 minutes weed whacking. You weed whacked for like 2.5 hours. And so now I'm super happy because it's like, all right, this is cowboy. We're no longer mowing. We're no longer weed whacking. We're getting on the horse and we're going to go find some cows. Like, we're going to go look for them. And so it's going to be a ton of fun. I already know it. It has been already. We've been working so hard trying to fix that place up and get cattle on the ground for the spring. But you know what? It's there. I'm happy to be a part of it.
It's funny, again, you talk about video games. You don't strike me as someone that does the video games or the iRacing because you stand out for the cowboy boots and the blue jeans, and you're very recognizable at the racetrack. So again, getting to play cowboy and do things on the ranch is what's going to keep you happy, not the video games, right?
Well, not saying I don't play them. I do love occasionally like a Call of Duty, and I occasionally like iRacing. The problem with me with iRacing is, and this has always been the problem with iRacing, it'll be that one night, like 8, 9 o'clock. Oh, you know what? I'm tired of watching TV or whatever. I'm going to do an iRace. Then you forgot how fun iRacing was. And so then you do it for like 8 hours a day or 8 hours a night every night for the next 3 months. And then finally you just get mad at it because you keep on getting wrecked by that 12-year-old over there in Italy or whatever. And then it's just one after another. You just keep on getting more and more frustrated. Then you're fed up and you're like, I'm done. Done with iRacing. Throw it away. Then it sits in the corner for like the next 2 months. And then finally it's just this continuous cycle of repeating. So
I agree. That's why I don't do it anymore, because I'm not good at it and I want to be good at it and I'm way too competitive. So well, I can't invest
your monitor behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that's what it was. I was like, I see three monitors. That's gotta be a simulator.
Yeah. My boyfriend is big on it as well. He was actually sitting there last night doing some Formula One game. So I'm over here trying to work and I have the sounds, the engine sounds behind me. But no, I get it. I can't put that much time into it because I'm too competitive, and then I get frustrated, and I had to remove myself from that situation. Tyler, a few more things, and I got some fun things just again to kind of better get to know you a little bit. Coming from the West Coast, any West Coast driver that I've talked to, one of the things that always stands out is the food on the West Coast to the East Coast is completely different. And the one common thing that always comes up in that discussion is Mexican food.
Absolutely.
Where do you fall on that?
It sucks out here. I don't care. It sucks. Like, I've never. So, like, there's Calimex, there's Tex-Mex, and then there's just like, there's Mo's. Like, it's not Mexican food. It doesn't have that same. I don't even know how to really describe it. It's just, you ask for red sauce out here and they give you like Campbell's spaghetti soup sauce. You ask for red sauce out on the West Coast, it's a homemade, really good like Mexican chili sauce. And so whenever I go back to California, one of my favorite restaurants, Rosa Maria's, they have a few restaurants over there in San Bernardino where I grew up. And when I ever go back to California, it's punishing on my stomach because you can't ever get enough of it. And I don't know what if it has anything to do with the authenticity of like the area, the location, but 100% the Mexican food out here is not as good. It's just it's true. There's no denying it.
I've learned not to argue with people on that.
Yeah.
I'm not as experienced in the West Coast to argue with that. You said earlier about growing up that you wanted to be a bull rider. That was your thing. That was what you thought you're going to do with the rest of your life. And I was going to ask about that. So since you answered that, what else, or is there something else that people might be surprised to know about you, or something that you like, or just anything in your background that people might be surprised by?
I played a lot of golf growing up, but I was on a swim team as well. That was my form of exercise growing up. Dad said he wasn't going to have a slob for a son, so pick a sport. And so my sister got into swimming. I don't remember how my sister got into swimming. I think what it was is the country club I was golfing at the time, they had a swim team at it. My sister just saw it. I think she got interested and she wanted to do it. So my sister started swimming. And so I think I just decided, well, I'll do what she's doing. And I ended up swimming for, I was seven. I ended up swimming like competitively up until I was like 13 on club teams, 13 or 14. So yes, I wore Speedo. Yes, I did all this stuff to win, right? You do what you got to do to win. I did all of it, and I won't deny it. I wore the cap, wore the goggles. I did shave, yes, everything, legs, arms, back, whatever it was, did it all. So people are always surprised when I say that because I got a short torso, long legs, and I'm built like a farm boy. I'm not slender. I'm husky. Thank you. And I'm built like a DeWalt or a Kobalt. But
I love that.
people are always surprised when I say that. The golfing thing too. Yeah. I mean, my dad always gave me a lot of opportunities to do whatever I wanted to do growing up. And I mean, there were some things he told me no on. I mean, he told me no on racing for 2 years until he finally gave in, and which has led us to here. But yeah, I always did a lot of things growing up.
Yeah. Well, listen, you brought up the swim stuff. I wasn't going to go as far as to ask if you went that far in with the Speedos and all that, but you brought it up, so I appreciate the honesty. And I think, again, people see you at the racetrack with the blue jeans and the cowboy boots, so that probably would be something that's surprising because you don't get that swimmer beach vibe from you. It's very much cowboy
Yeah.
and
Well,
yeah.
people ask me all the time. They're like, "Oh, hey, you from Texas?" I'm like, "No. Where are you from? San Bernardino? Where is that? California." Oh, I'm surprised by that. But if you've never met me, I've heard it 100 times, if not 1,000. If you don't see me, like I dress like this every day, or how I dress at the racetrack is pretty much how I dress every day. But if you never see me in that, they see the blonde hair and they think, "Oh, California." And then I get asked, "Oh, hey, do you surf?" "No. What do you do?" "I work on a ranch. I live on a ranch." "Oh, what? Really?" "Yeah. Where are you from?" "San Bernardino, California." "Oh, bro, what? Really?" It's two different ways to get to the same point. And I think it's the most hilarious thing on this planet.
Yeah, that is true. That's a very good point. Blonde hair, being from California. Yeah, surfer. I think you'd get lumped in with that as well. Circling it back to racing a little bit to close out here, who would you say you're close to in racing when you're not on the ranch and you're hanging out with people? Who would you say that you've connected to in that Truck Series garage?
I don't really know. I mean, I became pretty good friends with Zane Smith, Sheldon Creed, Brett Moffitt, Chase Purdy. He's my teammate again. That's a joke. But I became pretty close with those guys, hung out with them quite a bit. They're all really good guys. I wouldn't say that I've made friends in racing. Like, I don't have a buddy where I just go over to his house and play video games like you would when you were 13. You know what I mean? I think the relationships as you get older are changed quite a bit. Like, I know I'm getting more mature because, you know, I'm 20, turning 21. I don't go on the internet and look at toys anymore. I drive past a building. I go, oh, that's a really cool building. That's how I know I'm getting older. Not only that, even with my friend group from high school, I still have the same friends that I hang out with every day, practically from high school. And, you know, we don't sit up at our buddy's house and, you know, play video games anymore. We sit there and play poker. Like, that's how you know your interests are changing. And it's the same way with some of the friends I've made in racing. If, you know, we're hanging out, it's we're going to a racetrack or we're going to somebody else's house to, you know, party, have a good time.
You mentioned Chase there, and I wanted to bring that up as well, having him as a teammate. I'm assuming you guys are familiar with each other. You've had teammates before, so just how do you rank yourself or consider yourself as a teammate and your relationship with Chase in that regard?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't mind having teammates. I'm not against them. I'm very much the type of personality, and I've always been this way, where I prefer to work alone, whether it was a school project or whether it was responsibilities at the ranch. Like, I like doing it alone. I like having been with my own thoughts and doing it by myself. And one of the great benefits of having a teammate is I can still create my own thoughts and, you know, do it alone, but then they're always there. And then while you've come up with whatever it is, I can go to my teammate, be like, what do you think of this? And if he's like, dude, that's ridiculously stupid. Why did you think that? It's like, all right, now I know. Because I'm very much the person where I want to think of something off the wall or maybe something outside the box that it wouldn't be generally accepted. And if it's like a unanimous across the room no, then you know 100% you're wrong. But then that leaves, you know, without question of doubt. And that's the nice thing. Like when I was at GMS, I had 5 teammates that could, you know, I could discuss and have conversations with. And now I'm down to 1, which keeps the noise down, which is really nice. But I like Purdy a lot. He's been a pretty good buddy. We worked quite a bit together at Josh Wise's program at Jarvis Edge Development and became pretty good buddies. And so having him here, it's easy because I'm not having to not only learn a new team, new crew chief, I'm not learning a new teammate, not trying to figure out if I like him or not because I already like Purdy. He's a good guy. And so that makes it really, really easy.
Let's wrap up bringing it back to Hattori Racing specifically. That's how we started our conversation. And again, you mentioned about everybody knows what this organization is about. You've raced around them in the past. So you're going from good equipment into good equipment from GMS to Hattori. But is it one of those things too, Tyler, where you ever had that moment in the past where you said, while racing around them, you know, I'd love to get in that thing or that thing is fast. And then now here you are. How cool is that?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times a 16 has blown my doors off and I'm just watching them go by thinking, dang, I wish I was in that truck. Actually, when this opportunity, kind of going back to the beginning of this, when that opportunity first came along, I just thought to myself, do you know how many times I thought to myself, wow, I really wish I was in that 16 truck right now? It is crazy how you said earlier, just how things just fall into place sometimes. And it's just another one of those things where it's fallen into place.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's going to be fun to watch. Tyler, I appreciate the time this morning. I'm glad everything seemed to be going well as you get settled in over there. And again, I just appreciate the time. And it's always fun to chat with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Always love this.
My thanks again to Tyler for coming on the podcast. And as I said earlier, it seemed like he had a good time, really enjoyed himself. I know I did, really enjoyed getting to know him a little bit more and his insight as we prepare for a new season in the truck series. And it was really cool to hear how he's getting along with everybody over there at Hattori Racing. They're ready to go. That team clearly is a winning organization. They won a championship before. And it's going to be really interesting to see what Tyler and teammate Chase Purdy can do over there. So thank you to Tyler for coming on, giving me some time this offseason as we get ready for a new season. And of course, thank you to Josh Weinrich of Hattori Racing for helping coordinate, get it in our schedules, and make sure everything was ready to go so we could chat. My thanks, of course, to you for listening and clicking along every week. If you are new to finding the podcast, please leave a rating and review. Or if you are browsing the archives and have come across this episode or any of the ones recently and want to leave a review and a rating because you're enjoying what you heard, which I hope you are, please do that. Or reach out to me on social media. You can find me on Twitter. My handle's at Kelly Crandall. You can follow me on Instagram and communicate through there and even on Facebook. If you are on Facebook, let me remind you, as I do every week, to please look for the public page. That's where you're going to find links to the podcast, linksforracer.com, which I hope you have bookmarked, by the way. The public page is important on Facebook because if you try to friend request me, if you try to find my personal page and connect through there, I don't use that. I hardly ever look at it. I don't know what is over there. So your requests will just be lost in space. So please find the public page, hit the like button or the follow button, and you can chat with me over there. And again, find links and everything you need for racer.com and the podcast. You can also go to Patreon. I'm having a blast over there, having a lot of fun updating that and sharing some behind-the-scenes stuff with everyone about the podcast. Patreon's another way for you to support me, to support the podcast. You can get things such as my show notes. You can see who the guests are going to be before anybody else, have a chance to offer questions for guests, and so much more. Once again, it's just a great avenue for me to explore and a way for you all to support the podcast. So go to patreon.com/Kelly Crandall and check it out if you haven't done so already. You can also find the link to that in the show description of this episode. And we're going to get out of here for this week. That's episode 207. We're going to be back next Monday. We're going to stay in the truck series. We're going to go over to David Gilliland Racing, where Jerry Baxter is going to be our guest. Jerry is taking over crew chief duties for Tanner Gray. After spending the last 2 years as a crew chief in the Cup Series, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about his new driver, talk a little bit about Jerry, and a little bit about recent testing at Atlanta Motor Speedway and maybe what we can expect there. So that's coming next week right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.